This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Does one of you want to run this, or you want me to? What do you want?
You always ask that, but it's always you.
Yeah, everyone likes hearing your smooth intros.
Yeah. You're the one.
Well, I think everyone likes Super Steve's smooth intros, but that fucker's cut us loose. Welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise listeners. It's episode 415, our 2018 wrap-up. Of course, the question is, will we get this out before 2018 is over or not?
You're saying that there's no good comics that are going to come out in the next few days?
There are no new comic book days between now and the end of the year. So
we're safe,
I think that's
then.
I mean, true, your real indie comics come out on any day they want to.
This is true.
But your Diamond distributed indie comics will not be coming out. And because everybody's podcast is someone's first, let's get our introductions out of the way. It's me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, and we have our two Canadians joining us this week.
The good one, Phil.
Well, what does that make me?
That makes you the bad one.
Kevin.
Yes.
WWX. Say hi to people.
I already did.
You're so
particular. Difficult.
We are part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can also find our episodes online at indiecomicbooknoise.com. We have a Twitter page, handle, whatever the Twitter account, that's the term. We have individual Twitter accounts. I believe there's a Facebook fan page, but I'm not on Facebook, so I don't follow that.
Isn't it an organization page? I don't know how that works either.
I've never been on the Facebook, so unfamiliar with its mechanisms. But we're sponsored by no one. Proud, independent, free. As you heard from the warning at the beginning, there may be some suspicious language. But really, most of the concepts we cover, I don't think are that controversial. I mean, generally, I make some grumpy old man comics about how kids aren't how they used to be, and comics are no good no more, and all that type of stuff. And then Phil and Kevin talk about how great the new comics are and how bad the old comics are.
What? I don't think that's how it usually goes, Andrew. You're misleading everyone.
But we like to have normally a little round table. But while in addition to that, I thought we also might talk about the year that was, because it is the end of 2018. I don't mean necessarily a formal like top of, but just kind of what we're taking away from 2018, and to just start the ball rolling. I feel like the continued proliferation of new publishers and creators making the jump to do indie work from the big two. Now, obviously, the writers continue to split, but I'm seeing a lot of artists also trying their hand at, and that's been a trend that's been going, but I feel Ahoy Comics is new.
Yep.
Yeah, but
TKO.
But what's the backing? This is, it's weird, like, when you're following, like, some stuff that happened during the 90s, and I'm like, I'm remembering, like, all that stuff, and then you see these companies popping up nowadays, and I'm like, I wonder where the backing is, or what, like, how that all works, and like, why they're getting into the game. Like, sometimes, well, I'm doubting people's intentions, I guess.
Well, I think I've talked about it before. I believe there's probably a significant amount of cross-media opportunities. I mean, certainly I can't think of a time when we've seen as many TV shows, movies, video games. I mean, the 90s did have that as well. I would say maybe the one thing we don't have as many of is after school cartoons of indie properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of movies and TV shows being optioned, but I still feel like it's so skewed superhero. Like, we're getting there, but maybe it's going to be like another year or two before we get a lot of those things. Like Deadly Class is coming up.
You're not going to get your Valiant movies. Just give up.
They'll be big in China.
Yeah,
Aquaman and Venom.
I'm sure that Bloodshot movie has to be coming out in 2019, right?
Isn't it Exo Manor War? I thought it was Exo Manor War first.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Bloodshot.
Nice, okay.
And I think Deadly Class had its premiere.
Oh, did it?
I think because I saw something on Twitter, but maybe it was just like their official, like for people that worked on
like
it.
Like an event kind of thing.
Yeah, I
believe the first episode is streaming, but it doesn't officially premiere until next year. Or I guess I shouldn't say next year. I should say 2019. Just in case.
You have no faith. No faith.
I haven't seen any trailers or pictures, but if it's anything like the comic, I'm very excited.
The characters look like the characters. Like that's one thing I'll say about Runaways too. The characters were like the characters. Like whether the story isn't, I'm like if your characters, if you've got that part down, at least you went that far, right?
I feel like with the proliferation of the companies, I think Image, while still a big seller, isn't quite as hot as it was
last year
and maybe the year before.
I feel like they're slipping on me a bit. I'm picking up less Image lately.
I mean, it's surprising, as I think I've commented on, how many titles they put out now.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've slowly become, I think they do like 70, 80 a month type of thing.
But they're not as interesting, I find, anymore, some of them.
See, this is the other thing. If you have a book for every audience, then a certain amount of the books definitely won't appeal to you anyways. So it depends if Image, that quarter, if they're skewing like too much sci-fi. Like I remember when they had too many sci-fi books.
Every Image book.
But they also used to have the sort of high buzz book that, you know, for years it was Walking Dead and then Saga came out.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was just, there was always that book that non-comic book people read.
Isn't that, Monstrous has sort of risen to...
I think so a bit.
Yeah. Above an average, like, Image level.
Yes. But I just feel like the heat isn't... I don't know, for a while it just felt like Saga... Well, obviously The Walking Dead with all the shows and all that stuff. But Saga Forever, it just seemed like that was the one that was on everybody's, you know, best of list. Even non-comic book type of, like, where they'll have, like, 10 books and, like, 2 comics. It would always be Saga would be one, or Walking Dead.
Sandman, usually some, like, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. But I do feel some of that's probably just because there's so many new publishers. And I feel companies like IDW and Boom have really picked up a lot of interesting creators. I saw Grant Morrison had a Boom book, and I didn't know he'd work with Boom.
See, I find I'm buying, like, they kind of went down for me, too, because they went too much with the licensing way. Like, I like licensed comics, some of them, but I find, like, they focus on that a little too much. They don't do as much original stuff as they used to.
I find a lot of their books are skewing towards a younger audience, too. Like, they've sort of found a niche there.
Yes, I think Boom has definitely... Well, both have. Yeah. But Boom, I think, heels of things like Lumberjanes, books like that, have found that... Yeah, but I think they do it through their Kaboom imprint. But obviously, IDW with the Star Wars and the Marvel Superheroes for Kids stuff has found... But they also have some fun... I really enjoyed recently the Dick Tracy and the GoBots, and so while those are licenses, I find that they're not afraid to take non-traditional approaches to those characters.
Yeah, I can't see GoBots being a top seller.
How dare you, Kevin? How dare you?
Yeah, there's no way.
But I know it seems like Skybound is continuing to push new materials out. I just picked up the new Die book.
Yeah.
Is that the one where the person gets their nose cut off?
What?
That's the one that has the kid assassins, Die. And then Hardcore is the one
where it's
I think I've read both.
But... Andy Diggle and
oh no, I didn't read that one.
I also wonder about the creator rights though with all the situation though.
With well, Image they keep the rights. What do you mean, like that?
Skybound is a little more
nebulous. Yeah, I don't know if it's like Top Cow or something.
Well,
like
that. Yeah.
No, anything from Skybound is probably Robert Kirkman. So
I mean, you could still get screwed over if the writer says, I'm keeping all the rights, and the artist is like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't mean your rights are going to be fine, like, if you're just self-publishing or publishing mm-hmm. through Image, necessarily, if you're not through one of those, what do you call them?
Well, Robert Kirkman probably just makes a deal, like, if there's a TV show or movie, I get it, or something like that.
Yeah.
Some greedy thing like that.
But that's where your money would come from if you're going to get optioned anyway. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like it's kind of cutting your... At least you get a show? I don't know. Like, obviously, people weigh the different things, right? So...
Well, I would think that they would get something. Now, whether Kurt... I don't think he would get 100%, but maybe it's a 50-50 split, something like that. And if these things go on to become a giant hit, I think that would still be a good wave. My problem with some of these is I feel like some aren't as taking advantage of the comic book medium. Maybe as much. Like, I liked Hardcore. That was a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one where they can implant, like, a biodegradable chip in you. And then they can take over your body like a drone.
Okay.
And it's well executed and everything, but it just feels... very much like this could have just been a movie type of plot. And it's, well, like I said, it's not a knock against it. I just feel some of these need to get more into the advantages of comics and how you can play with the time dilation and get inside people's heads and some visuals that would maybe not translate as well to the screen.
I'm going to try to pre-order some of that Dead Rabbit merchandise in the latest previews. Or maybe not the latest anymore. You know what I mean.
What sort of... What, they got like shot glasses and stuff?
I think they... Or it was t-shirts. I just remember there was something in there. And I'm like, oh, that book is already like canceled or whatever it's doing. Because it got shut down. So...
I didn't hear that. What happened? I mean, Dugan's a pretty big name.
I think there was a bar or restaurant in New York.
There is.
That was
There's
Dead
a
Rabbit.
New York bar. So, oh, so they're suing for the...
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't think that was a great name to begin with, but,
well,
you know.
It certainly cost them at least one sale.
Yeah, that's what I thought about the whole time, too. Like, Andrew's not going to like this, and maybe not Thermo.
Did you see, there's Image has a bunny, another bunny one out where it's like an orphanage?
Yeah.
Yes, I have that one, too.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but it looks pretty cool. Looks good.
It's Keith Giffen and Benjamin Roman, Auntie Agatha's Home for Wayward Rabbits.
Yeah, and I love Keith Giffen.
You know what I always get excited about, though? Whenever I go through the catalog and I see, like, a TCAF book showing up there, like, 6 months after the show, and I'm always like, mm-hmm. oh, it made it into previews! Because I know what it is. Like, usually I'll just be flipping through and I don't know what anything is.
What do you have to do to make it into previews?
Like, you just have to be have a publisher that's distributed through Diamond.
Okay.
But so. there's weird stuff sometimes with like minimum order cutoffs.
Like I always
and all
thought just anyone who had a comic can post it in there.
No. Maybe.
You have to meet whatever requirements Diamond sets for distribution.
I think it's probably easier to get on Comixology than it is to get into the Diamond previous catalog.
Well, it's certainly more financially advantageous, I think, mm-hmm. given the thickness of the catalog and the fact that if you're not from one of the premier publishers, your orders are probably pretty limited. I don't know the numbers, but, you know, out of the several thousand comic shops, I bet you there's a half of them order next to nothing out of the back of previews that's not special order.
Previews is a... The previews redesigned itself. It is a mess.
Like, oh, I haven't read it.
I realized that, like, yeah, they put more publishers into the front. I'm like, cool. but it's in just in a random order, or maybe Image pays a lot of money to be first. But it's not in alphabetical order. And on top of that, they're like, hey, let's create a manga ghetto in the back of the catalog, and now let's put the books with the indie comics in the middle. And I'm like, why would you put a prose book in with comics? Out of all the things, that seems to be like the most, I'm like, why? Just why are you doing this?
I always loved all like the shot glasses.
I know.
Posters.
I know. Why don't you just throw those in the middle of the catalog too while you're at it? Just mix everything up. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, I haven't undertaken a previews experience in quite a while. It doesn't bode well. Well, also, there's no guarantees that whatever, especially from your smaller publishers, that those books are going to get out. You know, there could be a problem with Diamond or a problem with the publisher itself.
Or a problem with your own comic shop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you were going through one of those where your comic shop is ordering it, you know, you give them a code.
Yeah.
But any other things you guys taken away from 2018?
No, I do not remember 2018 very well.
I do not remember.
Well, I seem to remember, Phil, you had a few trends, but maybe we're dipping back before. Action Lab has been a publisher that you got into.
Yeah, but it's been a while because it seemed like they slowed down to me. Like, I still read Vamplade and enjoy that, but that's all I read from them anymore.
But yeah. Oh, yeah, because there was a time when you were buying the whole line.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Almost everything. But
enough of that Ginger Dead Man.
Well, if they put out more horror stuff again, I probably would pick up.
And then I feel like Kevin's also used to be by like the whole Valiant, be Mr. Valiant all the time.
You know, it's funny since they don't put out 10 books, and some of those books were things like I didn't want to buy. When they put out 6 books, it turns out I'm buying like 5 of the 6 books. I'm actually buying a higher percentage of Valiant books now of their whole line than I was before. And then they have all the pre-order editions.
What's the one book you're not picking up?
I wasn't buying Quantum Woody, so.
So I forgot you have no humor, that's right.
I mean, like, who knows? Maybe it's a good book. Like, I've listened to Daniel Kibblesmith talk on podcasts before, but did I pick up his book? No, I did not.
Well, maybe he needs to listen to you on a podcast.
Like, I never even gave it a look. I don't know. It's just hilarious that I'm buying just about everything now, though. Like, they're trying out. It seems like they're snagging some younger creators, and then some of them like almost immediately go to Marvel or DC, and I'm like, I'm buying those because they're pre-order editions, so I'm like, I might as well, like, you know, the variant edition isn't usually the one you want, but that's the one I want, and really,
what is their line?
Buy what you want, like that's the ultimate lesson, right? Buy the book comics you want.
What is a Valiant's line right now?
Bloodshot, Exo-Manowar, Faith, Ninjak. Who am I missing? Oh, Quantum Woody, I guess. And then there's... No. Did Quantum end and Livewire? I think Livewire takes the place of Quantum and Woody. And then they usually have some kind of, like, event book or something else going on, like Incursion. Mm-hmm.
Not a big Livewire fan.
I feel also that Dynamite seems to have slowed down a little too. I was just trying to think if, like, what, you know, no more. I don't think Magnus Robot Fighter's coming out.
No.
I kind of feel like they have
that Barbarella book.
They have Vampirella. Cool. But they used to just have more. Yeah. I feel like they had more titles.
But don't they just switch those around? Like, I thought, like, oh, we're not doing Magnus Robot Fighter anymore, but now Project Superpowers is back.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and then they have, like, the whole Vampirella titles, stuff like that. And Pulp Hero was like maybe a Tarzan.
I've never liked that parallel, though.
I feel like the Pulp Hero stuff has slowed down. For a while, it felt like they were doing, you know, like five. And same with the John Carter, Deja Thoris. I think they still have a book or two, but it felt like for a while they had like five books a month.
There's always one. There's always at least one or two. Yeah.
I'll tell you, Avatar has a slowdown.
Now Dynamite's doing a lot of crossover. Doesn't even exist anymore, I thought.
Wait, well, what's the thing? No, they have
one cross book still, yeah.
Or what's... No, maybe it's the... No, it's... Or is it Boundless? That's the Avatar successor, isn't it?
No, that's the guy who did Brian Polito or whatever his name is.
There's the one guy that puts out...
Evil Ernie guy?
With the 30 variant covers, the leather covers, and the explicit covers. Yeah, there's always multiple pages in the I see every month, and I'm just like, yep, that's a comic.
Hey, if you have your fans... You're well to listen and give them what they want.
Obviously, it must be working. It's been years, like, you know.
Yeah, I think all in all, it's been... Plus, while it's slowed down, I feel like Kickstarter is still going. Although the one I don't hear hardly anything about anymore is Indiegogo. Not that it was ever that big. But I feel like that's really... I don't even...
That existed.
I think part of the problem is because they were never guaranteed. Mm-hmm. People get burned on Kickstarter, which is purportedly guaranteed. So,
how can they guarantee anything on Kickstarter? Someone says, I'm going to make this, and then that person says no, and then they take all the money and run. And what's Kickstarter going to do? Track you down in real life and say, hey, you better make that comic you don't want to make.
Yeah, I got screwed, and I'll never use Kickstarter again.
But I feel Patreon, although I haven't stuck my foot in those waters, seems to have overtaken. And I know for a while Kickstarter was trying, I think they called it Drip or something. They had like a pilot program for their own Patreon style. But I don't know that ever came off. I still like it mainly for the people that have established a good track record. Mm-hmm. The Ditko Snyder partnership.
Yeah.
It's like those sort of books where they've done, you know, like 20 of them. Brian Polito, I know, had a big run there. So all these ones where you know, like, they've been doing them all along. And look, anything could happen, but if they've done 20 already, probably pretty good chance they're going to finish number 21.
Or I've supported stuff after I've met people in person, and then they'll have something on Kickstarter. I'm like, yeah, you're a guy that's done a lot of shows, and, you know, you have some kind of reputation.
I think you almost need that in a way.
Yeah.
Most of the projects now are from a staff. Steve likes to talk about that company from his neck of the woods that puts out their books through there. Like Ron Mars currently has the World War II book that's on there. And Jim Starlin did a Kickstarter. But they all work. Their publishing house uses Kickstarter for like the first round of most of their books. And our friends Kingbone Press had some good Kickstarters, so it's taking a rando chance on somebody, I still do it, but just a lot less. It has to be a fairly
you have to do
low
your research
dollar amount,
sure. Or check if it's out just cheap, others, and
if it's like $5 and it looks like it's a good fun kind of thing, I'm like, well, if I get burned on $5, I'm not going to be thrilled, but it's not going to be the worst. But that's another one where I feel like that model is not great, because now the floppies are almost always $10, or it's $5 plus shipping, or, you know, the single issue model maybe isn't great for Kickstarter anymore.
You'd think it's not great for you. What about shipping to other countries?
Oh, yeah, it's the worst.
Unless I'm getting a sketch or something, I'm like, it is totally not worthwhile.
What makes me laugh is I see so much stuff is printed in Canada. So I'm like,
really? Still?
Yeah, maybe
everyone has switched to China now.
Well, there's still a lot of printing in China, but you guys still do some printing up there.
We do, but it's, I don't know how, maybe it's better nowadays than it was in years in the past, right? At some point, people are like, never print in Canada.
Well, you want that artisanal, locally sourced, with trees that only have been felled by beavers, naturally.
Wow, I'm surprised I haven't heard that from someone else. We only use. That sounds like a it would be a thing.
All right. Do you boys want to talk books as well?
Hey, you want me to talk about a Kickstarter?
Oh, sure. I was going to say, I know I read a book, Kevin, that you teased. So I went out and made sure I read it, too.
Oh, that's good. So I got a Kickstarter, The Secret Voice, Volume 1. And I always find it interesting that there's a Volume 1 on it. I'm like, it could be a Volume 2. I'm not saying there won't be a Volume 2, but... Like, after many years, we get a giant hardcover of Dr. Galapagos. And I don't know... I don't know if I talked about the anthologies Ad House Books put out. It was like... They had three of them. It was a superhero one, a space one, and a romance one. And Dr. Galapagos by Zack Soto appeared in that anthology. And then he self-published a few issues... And then he went to Kickstarter for the rest of it. And I got a Citizen V sketch with this. So that was pretty awesome. Like, how can I turn down some Thunderbolts action, right?
I think you did. I mean, it's vaguely ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I already mentioned I backed the Matt Kent Kickstarter, even though I don't have a record player. So
I thought of backing the
digital file.
See, this proves that I'm a Mind Management, like, fake fan now, because I'm like, I was thinking about backing that, and then I didn't, and, you know, I was kind of like, maybe I should have backed that. Or then he had some other crazy stuff before that was, like a mini comic or something. I just remember there was a lot of Mind Management stuff he was doing on, like, Kickstarter and that, and I'm like, maybe I should get this.
I just did the basic little book and the record, but they also send you the... digital audio, so I can do it that way, because I don't have a record player. So.
But this is pretty cool. It's a hardcover, so when you open it up, it has a map. You know how much I like maps? It kind of reminds me of, you know, all those Dark Horse, or do you? Have you seen the Dark Horse Conan hardcovers?
Yes.
Yeah, but you know you open them up and it has a giant map of the world? Basically the same thing, except this is on a larger scale. So I was just like, all right, a map.
Well, they know their target audience.
I know, right? And it's one of those things where, like, this always seems to be a goal in the campaigns, right? Like, adding some kind of spot varnish thing to the cover. So you can turn it around and you're just like, oh, shiny. Like, always these little things.
I've seen that. It doesn't. I would not pay extra for that feature. just me personally.
But that's one of the first add-ons. Or if you were doing a trade paperback, you'd add the book flaps. Like, things that you're just like, oh, this is nice. This is a fancy item that I appreciate. And I just go, that's cool.
I don't know. I guess for some reason, the allure of spot varnish has never won me over in the same way it has for you.
I mean, it's a whole presentation thing. Like, if you don't enjoy the story, like, what's that going to do for you, right?
That would be awesome. You know, I love the flaps, the extra dust jacket, the spot mark. Comic was terrible, but all that other stuff really...
I mean, if you're at a show and they're both the same price or something, and you're just like, well, this one has better design and presentation, you might pick that one over the other one. Who knows if it's a better story? But it's interesting
I'm gonna go for the cheap one.
Those self-published issues are in here, but it's like some of the content's also been edited. So it's like if you have all the old stuff, it's like you can piece all that stuff together, and you know, it's like different parts of like some old, like, unmastered copy of something. Mm-hmm. Like, that's interesting to a certain extent. And then they have, like, the pinups by artists I'm familiar with in the back. Some I've talked about on this show, funny enough. Because, you know, when you're buying all books from that type of, you know, genre or something, it's like you see the same people sort of, like, contributing to each other's books, right? So you're just like, that's pretty cool.
Well, especially if it's an ad house, they must all... be familiar with the Ad House other titles. Maybe well, they go to the Christmas party together.
This also has the Study Group Comics logo and the Floating World Comics logo on it. All comics that I buy a lot of stuff from, so yeah, of course. Oh, and then I got a little, like, patch and, you know, the, like, the little extra things you get with some of the Kickstarters where... And I'm never quite sure what to do with the stickers and the patches, though. I'm like, am I supposed to be sewing these patches onto something or put them somewhere? I never know, right? Like, they're cool. So I just sort of have them hanging around somewhere.
Yeah, I always wish there was almost a button for me to be like, donate mine to someone who uses them. I'm in the same boat with you. I don't put the stickers on anything or sew the patches. Or so they just kind of sit, and I'm like... You know, if someone really loved these things, I would be more than happy to donate them.
You know what would be good, though? I don't know what the cost is and everything between pins and buttons and all these different things. But if it was a magnet, I would totally know what to do with that and would totally put it on a fridge. But that doesn't seem to be like a common thing that whenever I get involved in a campaign, it never... Like, it never seems to be that's an option where they're making magnets. Like, maybe it's too expensive to make a magnet.
I would think maybe that's it. It must be too expensive. Or maybe it just weighs too much.
Yeah.
Because they're quite a bit heavier than the buttons and pins and
But patches. If anyone makes magnets, or if I see magnets at a show, I'll totally put those on a fridge.
I've never been so bored in my life than hearing you guys talk about buttons.
Jeez, Phil's laying down the law. He does not care for your ephemera. All right. Well, what do you want to talk about, Phil? No. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, Phil. What's eating at you that you just have to get to?
Well, it's been so long. I think we should talk about some Valiant.
Oh. See, I didn't bring it up.
I haven't read it in a long time, but Bloodshot has a new mini out called Rise in Spirit.
8-issue
Do you know who it's by? Kevin Offhand? Oh, is it 8 issues? I figured it'd be like 4.
Well, I don't know, but the thing is, Valiant does these pre-order editions, so sometimes like you order way in advance, so like they can say 8 issues or whatever, 12 issues or something. So you don't know if the book is going to continue after that, but that's a significant investment. So I assume it works out for them getting all that like guaranteed, like, oh, these people are going to be ordering for the long term type of thing. So yeah, I already ordered all 8 issues already.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. No, I haven't read Bloodshot. Like it's been a couple, I don't know if you guys remember, but I bought every Valiant book possible and read it pretty hardcore up to a point, and then I just kind of fell off. But every once in a while, I'd kind of check out Bloodshot a bit, but it's been a while. Like, I never read Salvation. You didn't read that either, did you, Kevin?
I have the issues, but have yet to read them. I'll get to them.
Yes. So I don't know what that's about, but this goes back to his origin story. And the whole thing about it is they present it as we get to find out who he was before.
We know who he was.
Did we? Because that's what I figured, too.
He's Ray Garrison.
But did we know, like, who? Like, did we see him in action as a human and everything? Is that the same guy here at the beginning?
No, the guy at the beginning is, like, the guy from the 90s Valiant series. Oh. So you see those first few pages, and it might stir angry reactions in new or old fans, depending upon if you like that guy, if you want that guy in the present continuity, or if you think they're rewriting Valiant history.
I did not realize that's who it is. So that's a little more interesting to me now.
Kevin, Jay Garrick was the Golden Age Flash. That's from DC Comics.
Where did that come from? What the hell? What non sequitur, Andrew?
You said that he was Jay Garrick.
Took me a sec there.
That's not a Fawcett character. I don't think you're allowed to bring up those guys on this podcast.
No, he's allowed. I allow it.
You're the one that brought him up. I didn't mention it.
It's true. He's right.
That doesn't even rhyme. I give you a low score for that one, Andrew. It's not like Magnum and Magnum. That was good. Anyhow. So I would say this Bloodshot Rising Spirit is a weaker version of the first Bloodshot issue put out in 2012. That's my impression of...
Yeah. Well, I wanted the Bloodshot that kicks ass, which I did get a bit of in this, but the thing that really bugged me was this Jay Garrick, the Flash dude.
What?
He...
We're just gonna call him Jay Garrick from now on.
Like basically they showed like he took on this like hitman mission or whatever, and he's garbage, like this guy. He has no skill whatsoever. And then they make him Bloodshot and he's like the super killer, right? Like for me, Bloodshot, his past life, he should have been someone like the Punisher, you know, like that kind of character.
Well, I'm just gonna spoil the whole story. Okay, it was a failed program, it didn't work. Like, that's the whole twist of this issue.
Oh, okay.
Like, it didn't take. And I'm like, I'm good if it didn't take. Like, it seems like a waste to like, base the whole issue on like, some mind swipe implant story. Like, they've already done several, like, weird mind... stories with Bloodshot, and it seems very easy to do. And it's funny, when I first read the first issue of Bloodshot in 2012, like, mm-hmm. I didn't read 2 and 3 or 4 right away. I was just like, I don't know how I feel about this. And so then I bought the first trade, and then I came back for issue 5. So it's kind of weird, like, we're here again, and I'm like, I hope there's more to the story, because once again, I'm not thrilled with a less than, you know, it's just, I wonder if that has something to do with the creative team, though, because, like, Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson, like, they've been scooping up the Marvel works, and then it says they're only here for the story, so I'm wondering if they were gonna do it, and then they got, like, more Marvel work than they expected, so now Kevin Grievous is credited as the script. Ken Lashley's fine on the artwork. It's,
yeah, I enjoyed the art, like, especially the fight scene at the end.
Like it's
that looked good.
Like, I think it would be fine. Like, it's action oriented. It's what you would think of a character called Bloodshot, but mm-hmm. the stuff that has come before is of a more stylized, I would say, more complex, interesting art style than this. Like, this is more middle of the road.
Kevin Lashley's a pretty big DC guy. He did a lot of Batman.
Like, I don't have a problem. It's just, I thought they had established, like, a different style, and it's fine. New series, new style, but it's kind of a letdown after having artists that did different stuff. Like, no one's going to be impressed with this first issue.
No, definitely not. I had got the second issue too at the same time, but I couldn't even read it because I was kind of like not looking forward to that.
Like, I guess it swerved longtime fans, right? Because they put the old, you think, look, we have this guy from the original Valiant, and then by the end of the issue, they're just like, psych, it's not that guy, we got you. And I'm so like, I guess you got
the
me.
The second issue, when I flipped through it, I thought it looked like him coming back, but I guess it's a new guy in him now.
I don't know. All I would say is, if you want to read a Bloodshot origin story, read Bloodshot Zero that Matt Kent did. And it went through, like, World War II all the way up to modern day. It was so good.
Did Kent do the art on those Valiant books or just write? I like when he does both.
I don't think he did the art, no, on most of his books.
You're going to make me look this up, right?
Like, he probably did an issue or something here and there.
I'm pretty sure he did a cover. I'm not sure if he actually...
Wait, Kevin, you're telling me Valiant had a variant cover? That sounds so...
Hard
to believe. With their glass variant cover.
I was going to tell you. Did you know they innovated once again in the industry by coming up with a glass variant?
Yeah, I thought I told you to go get one of those so you could see it.
I know. They actually have a letter from the publisher in here about how they tried to do it and it didn't work out in some iterations. And I'm thinking, I wonder why that didn't work out. Some publishers are just like, what? Are you crazy? Okay, I was right. Yeah, Kint did do a variant cover for Bloodshot Zero, but it was Chris Karras who did the art in that issue, who is also awesome.
Is his style like Matt Kint, or
he might make you want to jump? I don't know. That's all I got.
So does he draw like the old Chris Cross and those guys?
Not quite the same, because it's like, what, like 15 years later? Like wasn't he more?
Hey, George Perez is still going.
So no, but you know how Lemire and Kint have that deceptive, simple, I don't know what to call it.
It almost looks like it's shaky in a way.
Yeah, it almost has like some like childhood innocence in baked into the artwork where like you could think of almost like you could do it, but you can't do it. It almost. It sounds insulting in a way. Like, I think Lemire would be easier to approximate than Kint, though.
Kint, as you point out, it's a deceptive simpleness. Like, there's a lot behind what he chooses to do, but it appears like it was done in a hurry or quickly or whatever. There's a lot to unpack there.
And I don't think it's like the Darren Cook where he... Like, where instead of 1,000 lines, he just picked 3 lines, and he just picked the 3 lines that he needed. Like, Kint isn't exactly like that. Like, you can tell right away, I think, if you know anything about comics, like, Cook is just picking the lines. Even though some people might be upset that he's using less lines, like, Kint is, even though he's, like, more stripped down, he's not exactly like that either.
No, because he can have... what appear to be almost scribbles in the backdrop or things like that that work to great effect. Like I said, everything appears hurried or quick, but when you sit and really take it in, you can tell it's very measured and thought out, and things aren't usually just sort of randomly dropped into places.
So yeah, the Chris Cross that did do that Zero issue, he's... Like, I think you can still tell it's him, but it's not like those Captain Marvel issues. That's where I remember him from.
Like, well, I got to think the coloring's all different, I would imagine, than from back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure.
And the paper's probably different as well.
Yeah, they were probably still in transition at that point. Because I remember those Thunderbolts issues that were, it was like the last book to go glossy. It still had those pulp pages, like almost, what was that, like 2000 or something?
Yeah, I think that's around about then. But anyways, I distracted you boys from Valiant. I will go back to sleep and
nope,
let you continue.
Valiant did that on its own. I don't think I'll be picking up Valiant for a bit. Because, yeah, when you told me the lineup, Kev, it didn't seem too interested. Like, I don't like Livewire. I don't like Faith really too much.
I think
Ninjak, I like in doses.
Well, Ninjak is if you're into ninjas and you're into spies and James Bond and stuff like that, then you'd probably be into Ninjak.
Like, I took a look at that Ninjak versus the Valiant.
Oh, man. That was the one I skipped.
Okay.
I'm like, this looks like a hard pass because they had that whole web series coming out. And then I guess they thought, oh, well, we'll do a miniseries. And I'm like, I can't do it. I like ordered like pretty much everything, but I'm like, I can't do it with this one series. EXO is probably their standout book right now because Kint's still doing that. And okay. They've had like just usually their top artists on those books.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. We'll have an episode coming up where I'll cover 11 issues of Shadow Man. I'll cover 12
Where's
issues
Archer
of Bloodshot.
Is there no Archer and Armstrong anymore? Where are they?
There isn't. Like, they've done some one-shots, but The last series was probably, oh, maybe a year ago or more. You kind of need the right people for a book like that. And it was hard to live up to Van Lente after he did his whole magnum opus there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to save that Valiant for the next time Steve is hosting, right?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, although I am very disappointed that you gentlemen in our year-end wrap-up did not mention Black Hammer, considering we went on a many episode streak, that's a Dark Horse book. The only thing you guys would talk about.
I have a good excuse because I wasn't there.
Yeah. You can get out all your Black Hammer talk if you have any.
Nope, I forget Black Hammer when I read.
The book of the year, and he forgets it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was my book of year. I was trying to think earlier. What would my book of year be? I did enjoy that. Yeah, but I don't think it'd be my book of the year.
Really?
No, because there's definitely stuff I enjoyed more. But I'm racking my head trying to think of it. But I know there was some mini I loved a lot.
Hmm.
But yeah, Black Hammer's up there for me for stuff I enjoyed this year.
It gets so close to that line of like, this is Wolverine. This is the question.
Boys, I wasn't inviting you guys to do yet another Black Hammer episode.
It's okay. Really? Phil can't remember. It's like he's in that Black Hammer world where something is preventing him from talking about it.
But
yeah, that something is me.
Wow, Andrew. Yeah. You're anti-God.
Now he is going to edit just so he can get rid of that.
He's going to end the podcast. It's just going to cut off.
I'll cut into some YouTube music. Episode of GoBots from 25 years ago.
Turbo, something big's happening downtown. You and Scooter meet me there to check it out.
Right, Leader One.
I thought you didn't like new comics. That's what you told people at the beginning.
That's true. I don't like new comics. Of course not.
GoBots has an old look to it.
Yeah. Well, I like I said, I know I read something that Kevin read or said he was going to read.
But you didn't like it though, right?
Kevin oftentimes says he's going to read stuff and then passes on it. So
that's because I want someone to say, yes, I also have that. So I'm just like, I guess people don't. And then I look at it and I go, and then I come up with some lame excuse not to read it or whatever.
Yeah, heaven forbid you should read an extra 2 comics in a week or something.
I know. Well, I try to. It's the constant battle of keeping something fresh and then not knowing if we're actually going to record. And then I don't want to read too far in advance. And then that ends up me scrambling at the last minute going, what am I going to read? It happens every time. But what's this book, Andrew?
Well, are you going to reveal it? Do you know which one I read? You listed 2 separate books.
You read Bitterroot.
Yes, I read Bitterroot from Image Comics. I read the first 2 issues. This is the David Walker, Chuck Brown, Sanford Green creators. And Rico Renzi is listed along with Sanford Green as the color artist.
What about the letter?
I don't know. Clayton Cowles, I believe, at least on the first one. Yes, he's on the second one, too. I don't know if issue 3 is out. I only have the first 2. Kevin, did you get the first 2 or just the 1? Or did you not read it? Are you saving it for some other time?
I don't believe it's arrived at the house at this point. At the dwelling, at the residence.
Then why did you say you were going to read it?
I said I was going to read the first issue. What did you think I meant?
I thought you meant you were going to read... So you did read the first issue. Okay, yes. I thought you were saying you didn't read any of it.
No, I thought you meant that you read the first 2, and I'm like, once again, I didn't read the 2, second issue.
Okay, good. Okay. But you did read issue 1.
But well, I remember seeing the solicitor, the announcement for this, and it's like the Power Man Iron Fist team, Walker and Green. And I was like, yeah. And then I see the solicit, and then it says Chuck Brown. And then I'm like, uh-oh. And then it's totally fine, but I was just like, if they're doing their own book, I didn't... I guess I wanted the pure experience, right? And I'm like, if they're bringing in some kind of co-writer for some reason, I just assumed bad things that I shouldn't have assumed, and the issue is totally fine.
They're doing that thing where they're just throwing them all in the hopper together, which makes sense because in comics, the artist is the storyteller. So they're just listing the three of them as creators.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there is no writer on the book.
Like, I can't tell the difference which part is which, or it doesn't sound like totally... Like, it wasn't like, oh, they decided to do a comic that was totally different than their previous work. Like, I can't separate the parts out. It just looks good and reads pretty good, so, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Chuck Brown was maybe giving more of the historical elements to it.
Yeah.
Because it is set in, what, the 20s, I want to say? Is that right, Kevin?
1924, I think it says.
Okay, I was just going off how it looked. I didn't. Forgot what the actual date on the inside of it was. But yeah, it's that 20s feel and has a very kind of Hellboy monster hunter-y feel. At least that's what I got out of it.
I'll compare it to something else at Image that we read this year too. Do you remember Gravediggers? That was about a group and they were going after supernatural stuff.
I feel Gravediggers was taking a lot more chances visually and in the storytelling, though.
Well, yeah, but I think that also because remember it had two parts of the story where it had some crazy cosmic epic and then they went to the grave diggers.
Yes.
But I mean, still feel one... like this is like just taking like another genre or another something else and just applying it to like this different era. Like, Gravediggers was like, well, what if Gravediggers did the supernatural? And this is more like, oh, what if these guys did the supernatural? So it has, like stuff unique to that, to those categories, but it's still familiar in some sense.
But I want to say, I feel like it's a very big difference when you take the kind of chances that Gravedigger takes and has some... truly bizarre, almost non-sequitur-ish elements to it, which
true.
I like.
This is
but
true.
I mean, you're taking a risk. Like, this is very, you could hand this to anybody who's familiar with comics, and they might not like the story or whatever, but it's very straightforward. It's very clear what's that. I mean, there's a mystery to it, and there are mysterious elements.
Yeah, like, I feel like there's more of a grounded element here, but there's still those... crazy like superhero-ish scientific flourishes where someone might have like a crazy gun or some crazy potion or something.
I do like what, for lack of a better word, the steampunky sort of elements to it from that 20s feel of like your devices are, and that's also to me somewhat Hellboy, lots of big needles and tinctures and potions and, like you say, funny-looking guns with extra knobs and wires and hoses. And that sort of thing is a very good aesthetic, I think.
It's almost like the retro Black Hammer stuff. When you're going into that time period, you're like looking for the like old-school equivalent of some modern device.
Because there's two issues, maybe you should give a summary. I don't want to spoil anything that I'm remembering from the second issue.
It opens up in a... Oh, this is the weird thing. It opens up with all the jazzy partying, but I sort of did, like, the double take, the double flip, where I opened it, and then I'm like, wait, is that the cover, or did I miss a page? Because the story opens right on the inside cover.
I always like that. Feels like you're getting right into it.
Me too.
Well, particularly because, like, it's a dub... Not the full double page, but the double page with inset panels, so it makes it kind of... Very, like, grand opening to the story. Like a big vista to show. And issue 2 does not do that, by the way.
Oh. What do they have on the inside cover, then?
That image that they use, which is looks like an old-timey photo of the whole group of them.
Okay.
The guys in the diver suit.
You know, this might...
straight jacket thing with the credits on it.
This might be, like, seem silly, but... Whenever a trade paperback or a comic opens and it just has that blank white page and there's nothing on it, that always bugs me. It always looks way out of place. Like, put something on that page.
And the second issue also has back matter as well.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah, the back matter reminds me of something like Out of Criminal. Like, that extra, like, historical context or something that they want to throw in there.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to include that in the collected editions or not. Like, if that's, like, the tease to get you to jump on the floppies or what. Because don't they sometimes withhold that stuff when they collect it? To, like, give people the desire to read these things?
Yeah, I wonder if that's... That's probably more like a personal creator thing going, I like single issues. So I don't know if people feel... Like, I get the feeling that everyone doesn't have a strong, like, preference that they would totally alter the, like, part of the experience. Or, like, I feel like Criminal, it was like trying to make things into kind of like a magazine. Like, I don't feel like anyone really took that to, except for indie comics, like, took the magazine thing to a total other level where it's, like, half comics and, like, half something else. Like, I always feel it's like, a few pages at the back.
Sometimes in the first issue, there's back matter, and then it disappears. You know, it kind of dries up, like, oh, that was, like, the first. Well, like Phil said, he likes it when they're double-sized. Sometimes they throw a little extra into that number one issue to kind of wow you in or give you, like, an afterword. They want to throw you into the story, but then after they want to give you something to give you why they got there, how they got there, what's to keep you going. And I like that they continued it in issue two. Although I guess someone would say, hey, maybe I want more story instead. And the back of issue two, they say the third one is going to be January 9th. So it does not come out yet.
So they didn't throw in some interview from 10 years ago promoting some unrelated book?
Well, anyways, I interrupted you. So it opens with the...
Yeah, so they sort of set the scene. And then we get introduced to some characters. Oh, and then, of course, we get that splash, that end history in, like, an info dump here of these hunters and that have been declining over the years. I guess people die and... Or... I don't know, like, what do you take away from... It's just... It's a hard life, and that's why they're declining, not for other reasons...
Took it whenever they tell that stuff to represent the fact that the world is changing.
Yeah.
Like, as things get more modern, and I could be reading this in from many other books, but a lot of people love that trope as things get more modern, you know, like the elves and the magic of the world kind of goes away somewhat.
But
and it's replaced by, you know, the machines and.
Yeah. But it seems to be that the narrative is suggesting that those other things are, like, increasing, and, like, the humans and the hunters are decreasing, so as society is going along, they're actually improving themselves.
True, but that they need that to set the ticking clock to drive why this story is important rather than another one. You know, like in the old Ghostbusters, when all the somehow the activity is getting bigger. Like, all that stuff needs to run to a head, because that's why they chose to set the story in this time frame.
I definitely got...
You know what I mean?
Like, the we should probably mention the coloring, too. Like, it's pretty particular. Like, in the jazzy scene, you have, like, the pinks, the purples, the oranges. And then later on, like, you get to the, like, the night scenes, and there'll be more of the reds, the purples. And then some other scene in the park later on, like, you'll get more of the greens.
Yeah, that was my one big complaint. I don't like this new... We're supposed to be in the age of the coloring. I just hate... It feels like they just put a filter on. It does nothing to highlight the artwork anymore.
But this is about...
we're just setting a mood, and that's it. The second issue, I feel, is better.
Okay.
But I would rather, at this point, have this book be black and white. I feel like the color adds nothing. And like I said, it's like, oh, we're at night, so it's going to be all purple. Oh, we're in the park, it's going to be green. And it's like, it just feels like they just turned a tint on And there's nothing done to really showcase the excellent, otherwise excellent artwork.
But I feel like when there's light or something, they use another color to accent certain elements. So it's not just, you know, not just a plain color going through. But this totally reminds me of how comics used to be colored. Like, it's old-timey stuff where you would just have buildings in the background with, like, one color.
Yes, but they would color, the figures would never be just a wash of all the same tint. Especially in the older books, you would never have, like, hey, everything they look like is in a purple light, so it's just different types of purple, in a sense. And yes, they spotlight a few items, but we're talking two elements on a page, maybe three. I don't know. I was very disappointed in the coloring. I feel like this feels very modern to me, that, like, oh, just shade it all in some color, and, you know, we'll call that a day. I'm telling you, I'd rather have just four flat colors dropped in.
But that the page that's totally looks like it's supposed to be like a photo or type of thing, because I just dropped like that tone in there, like the yellow brownish. It totally
sepia.
Yeah. It totally reminds me of like a Luke Cage thing where you're like flashing back to, or even like the TV series when they're flashing back to like how they used to be, or this is how things. Like, that totally draws me into, like, that technique.
Yes, and if they had done it all in one tone, maybe, or, like, a black and white or something, I would have been much happier with it. I feel like this just, to me, it, like I said, it doesn't highlight any of the artwork. It's distracting. And like I said, issue two, they're not as heavy-handed. And maybe it's the scene setting, because some of the scenes there are not at night or in the dark or whatever.
That could be, because this but is pretty much pretty dark.
Yeah, and I just feel like, oh, just go black and white if you want to do that. We're fine with it.
But people don't like black and white unless it's The Walking Dead or manga, right?
I don't know. I think there's room for horror in black and white in general. Wasn't 30 Days a Night and all those, were those color books, Phil? Those vampire ones?
No, I think they were black and white. Colored. No, they were colored or two-toned, I think, or something. Or
yeah, something like where you're, it doesn't need to be straight, but you can, like I said, pick one or two or something, and then I just feel it allows the artwork to more, almost like the cover. I feel the cover has a lot more different shades to it, because his jacket is brown, but the shirt is kind of pink, and the tie is separate, like, why couldn't the interiors be more like that?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they always do the covers to look better than the interiors. So that's just how the game goes.
We get some of these scenes with the police in here that sort of, like, fill us in on some of the going-ons. I guess there's some kind of deal they have set up with some of the families in Harlem to... Maybe they're in on this whole... monster situation, and you bring the monsters to them and they'll fix them up with their potions and or get rid of the problem, because then
certain members of the constabulary, though, they have that arrangement.
Well, there's
there's a big thing about like neighborhoods, and there's a running joke about that's not my people, those aren't my people, those are your people, those aren't my people type of thing. And maybe that also continues into the I know that continues into the second issue as well, because they were trying to put a little, I think, humor in it as well. That element, I'm not sure it reads as, I mean, I'm glad they have lighthearted, but I wouldn't call this like a, I didn't laugh at anything in the book. Maybe smile a few times, my wry smile.
Yeah, like the one guy here talks like above an average person's pay grade, I would say.
He reminded me almost of the Frank Miller characters, that, you know, the two henchmen, and the one guy is always using the $6 words. So doesn't he use it incorrectly? I don't remember if that was but just those like men with a tough life who like to use the fancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or more like he's supposed to be like the Sherlock Holmes guy. Like, I'm going to use these words.
And drinking tea.
This is true. Yeah, so we get like two of our hunters here facing down one of these demons, I guess you would say, devils, whatever you want to call them. What's their ranking, slang again?
I don't know if the ranking is correct, or like, I don't know if the different names mean a different.
Oh.
But they're fighting Jinnu.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means like it's like a demon is more powerful than a Jinnu, or they're synonymous or whatever. But the point is, the Jinnu should be like the basic level. Like, they're tough, but that's what they're bred to fight. Like, they're trained and breed, and the families fight Jinnus. And so the opening scene is the more experienced one is letting his younger partner figure it out. And then he's having a hard time, of course. And the partner sits back drinking tea until their cousin or sister or some woman comes up and beats up the Jinnu. But again, we're led to believe that this is an era where generally the women don't do the fighting. They work the potion.
Like, amongst all the other stuff you're talking about, you get into this weird generational thing, too, where the women are supposed to do something. And then she's like, well, I'm really good at fighting, so why shouldn't I be fighting? I don't want to waste my time just, like, grinding roots and herbs and all that type of
stuff. So we're going to see that change, and that might be part of why there's less of those monster hunters or not. But it boils along, I think, and then sets up the mystery as it continues.
And then Pete the Pigeon shows up?
Yeah. Well, I was going to speed the summary up and not turn this into
that's probably good.
A Thunderbolts-ish, because you're going page by page. But basically, as Kevin says, these monster hunters, they're out solving the issue of the increased activity. And they run into one that's bigger, you know, like a giant Jinnu that scares them. And yeah, that's simultaneously cut with a scene where there's a lynching that's about to happen.
Yeah, this is why you don't want me doing the summary. I'm following along at the beginning, and then I jump to something at the end, and then at the beginning again, and then we're going along. I'm like, it is like Thunderbolts.
Well, so I'm like, we don't need a 45-minute plot summary of the first.
This is true.
If you like Monster Hunter set in the 20s, this, and you're should be from, I'm mentioning with along with Kevin, I think everyone knows what generally what Sanford Green's artwork is like.
Yeah.
So it feels like that. Don't let my knock on the color necessarily persuade you.
Yeah, but his character.
I feel like his artwork is solid. The character design is great.
Yeah, yeah, and he knows how to do different body types.
Yes, and so everything on point there. Like I said, I feel the second issue, the coloring got a little bit better.
Yeah, I noticed there was a bunch of different covers for the first issue, and I'm like, which one do I want?
Yeah, but if you like I said, Hellboy, Hellbillies, any of that stuff, I think this would be right up your respective alley. There's one twist in the second issue, if Kevin wants to plug his ears, where they interrupt the lynching, and it turns out that all the clan people are monsters except the one guy. And so the one guy ends up following the monster hunter around. And I guess that's okay, but I probably could have done without the clansman who's going to join the black group of monster hunt. I mean, I guess, look, if it's a redemption arc or something, you got to have it, but feels like sometimes that stuff can be a little like, I don't know. Or maybe it's meant to show that even if you're part of some hate group, you're only one monster intervention away from putting down the torch or whatever.
It's also interesting to compare this against Bloodshot, because Bloodshot is doing like a 90s popcorn movie thing, and I found this did the Monster Hunter thing, like that type of thing, better than Bloodshot did its thing.
Well, I also enjoy that their designs are so over the top. It feels very comic book.
Yeah.
Like, I guess you could put this in a movie, but I bet you if they do, they make the monsters less exaggerated.
Also, I don't think this is, like, all standard. Like, there's enough breakouts in the panels and stuff like that where it's, like, it's not like a storyboard.
No. No, no, but just also from a story.
Yeah.
All the elements of the story, I feel like they could have made the monsters a little more bog standard, that type of thing. And you're right, the panel composition, particularly, like I said, there's some stuff in the second issue where you're like, oh, that looks, it's a nice visual that I don't know would translate to film. I mean, it would. You just wouldn't. They wouldn't copy the panel. They do the film equivalent.
Yeah.
But I'll get issue 3 for sure. I mean, I'm hoping that the coloring continues to evolve. I don't know. That might, it might wear me out though at some point. I mean, did you keep following the graphical interface issues of the other Image title, which also had the new one come out this week? Have you continued to read it, Kevin? Has it bothered you to any degree?
How about, Andrew, I give you an update next episode?
Fair enough.
I mean, I'm cramming for another podcast. So some things had to be put aside.
Man, you know that those DC comics aren't going anywhere, Kevin. You're good. They're not
disappearing
going.
Comics, is that what you're calling them?
Well, I know all the good ones they seem to send to Walmart, but other than that.
Whoa. I don't know if I should acknowledge the existence of those comics or not. I mean, I saw them once at a convention for $20.
Oh, my. Are you serious?
Well, they don't cross the border. So if someone brings them across the border and sells them here, they'll hike the price, of course.
That is some... All right, we're going to create a smuggling mule train.
That's okay. We're going to smuggle Walmart DC comics.
I only bought the one when I was back east, and I was like, you know, these are good, like... product should be available in comic book stores.
But the whole point is to not have them in comic book stores.
Why? What is
because
that?
Because there's more Walmarts than there, and it can penetrate more different channels.
True, but what sales is Walmart losing to the comic book store? Do we really think there are all those people that... No, what happens is people just don't buy them, like me. Do you think it's driving more? No, I'm just not buying the comics. So they would have more sales. And Walmart can't honestly be like, oh, how dare you? Oh, we're going to lose so much money to the comic book stores. I mean, I understand them not wanting it to run in like, you know, Target or things like that. But
you know that stuff is going to get collected in trade paperbacks later on.
Ugh. It's DC. That'll take 8 years for them to do it.
They're not that bad anymore. Why are you trying to turn this into a DC podcast?
Why are you... No, even better. Why are you always hating on everything?
Why, me? Kevin
said that up front. Kevin's he hates new comics, remember?
I'm the one that likes these DC dumb comics. I just want them to be available in the comic book store.
It's true. He was saying positive things about him.
For once. So
the comic book store has a ton of exclusive stuff already.
Yeah, exclusive. It's only exclusive because no one wants it, Kevin.
Wow. You just threw indie under the bus, too.
Oh, you really think Target is clamoring to get... They could get a diamond account just as easily as anyone else.
Yeah.
No one's stopping them. There isn't a conspiracy.
For as long as I've read comics, there's always been the why don't we get more comics on the newsstands? And then the stores are like, these comics are too cheap. You need to raise the price for us to make money off of them. And then someone will go, raise the price? That's too few pages for that price. And then some other dude will come in and say, hey, it's amazing. You can produce a comic with those talented artists for that low price. And then it just goes around in circles.
They do have them at the newsstand. It's just a very small amount, and they get beat up. Like
the newsstand is like
isn't gonna buy
is
like
is like Bongo and like Doctor Who now. That's what we're down to in the newsstand here now.
They still have a few, but
Archie,
are you gonna buy a comic that's been sitting out in the sun for a week? I'll
buy them a newsstand sometimes. Well, in Canada, our newsstands are inside. We have buildings. Because it's not apocalyptic over here like there. But...
What?
It's the exact opposite. It's because we can go outside, Phil. Unlike 10 months out of the year.
Okay, I see your point now.
Like the mainstream publishers left the newsstand like years ago now.
Well, there's usually a few, like a couple Batman or Spider-Man.
No.
Comics.
Yeah, no, it's always something big. Yeah.
Well, like Andrew, Spider-Man, are you living in the past?
No, you can go see them, but who's buying these... sun-bleached, like, bent-over comic books.
This is my complaint about going to a comic shop and finding these issues just in some disarray in some bin somewhere or on some shelf somewhere. I'm like, what's the likelihood that these things are going to sell? At least bag them.
Well, I think they're hoping that it's some, you know, dad in a hurry get something for Junior.
And did I tell you about the time one of the comic shops I went to, they had changed over a few times to different things? And then at one point they brought in a pop machine and all the Maximum magazines and stuff like that onto the newsstand.
Because when I was a kid, there were more crossover. Now the only thing that's left, I think, is Heavy Metal. But there used to be Savage, Sword of Conan. There were a bunch of those than the Marvel magazines. There used to be more kind of pseudo-comic-y stuff that would run on the magazine rack.
You know what, though? Here in Canada, at Chapters, I get a lot of like indie comic magazines or indie trade paperbacks there. Like that's where I go to get my indie trade paperbacks.
Yeah,
because they order a lot, like on their own. Like
they like were I find also they have
a great indie selection usually.
Yeah,
well, certain stores you have to kind of go around, but
yeah, they're also an early adopter of a lot of the Japanese stuff too.
Nah, who cares about that stuff though?
Yeah, it's nice that
you skip that aisle.
I do like that aisles. There are, but I mean I get it from their end. They're probably not selling a lot, but I just feel like. Kind of like you were saying about some books trying to make the magazine push, Kevin. I do feel like that mix hybrid thing, except for Heavy Metal, has gone away quite a bit from the old days of like, because that Hulk had a magazine one. Even that Marvel Premiere used to sometimes be, I think that was the one that had the Punisher, used to be on the newsstand in the magazines too.
That's one of those arguments you get into with people, right? Where like, it's a first appearance. Oh, but that wasn't a comic, so that doesn't count. I'm like, it's a magazine. It's comics. There is literally sequential storytelling. It's but just in it a different reprint? Shape.
Is it a reprint, though?
No, it's original stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they used to be. But they stopped. That was kind of like the 70s and early 80s. Yeah. They were trying to flirt with these other markets. And it was just kind of cool because sometimes you wouldn't always get to go to the comic book place. But you know, magazines were everywhere. So even if you didn't get to go, sometimes you could get a couple bucks to buy like a, you know, a Hulk magazine or whatever. And it was kind of fun because like they felt a little different too.
Yeah. And plus they were thicker and.
Yeah. And usually had pinups and like text piece. There was a lot to them usually. So they would take you a long time to get, you know, because you had to justify the extra dollar or whatever. Plus, you know, some of them had, you know, topless women or whatever, if that was your thing.
Crickets.
Yeah. I guess that was only my thing. Sorry, I was immature as a youth.
See, that's where I would drop a soundbite in, and it would be funny.
We try and run a clean show here, Andrew, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, the only way I can get Kevin to stop from putting all the stuff on Marvel Noise is by swearing every third sentence, so
yeah.
Oh, that was good stuff. I cut some of the indie stuff though too, that could have been, but you know, I don't know, we had you with the Comics Journal at least, so that was probably the best outtake.
Well, I guess, do we have anything else we want to wrap up the episode /2018 with, gentlemen?
I read a comic about anxiety.
Okay.
Mary and the Worrywart by Jen Woodall. And it's basically this giant, like, blob. Like, you know that, have you seen the Futurama where they have, like, that blob that attaches itself to, like, see-through kind of green slime blob that attaches itself to people? And they're, like, sort of, like, become brainless? Anyhow. It's a slug blob type of thing, and it represents anxiety, and it attaches itself to our title character here. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of saying, like, all the bad things, like you're worthless. What if this happens to you? What if you die? What if this bus runs you over? And it's, like, all expressing all the anxiety and all the worst things that you would be thinking about.
Is he worthless?
No.
So it's kind of
it's sort of like the cartoonist trying to work out some kind of like issues.
So is it like that Hyperbole and a Half series? I don't know if you've seen that one. That's like a big seller, but it's not. I don't think it's in comic book stores normally. It's by Ali Brush, and the art is really kind of simple looking. Again, it's like the kind of. So I don't know if it's done on a machine or not, but it's kind of like all like a lot of the problems and mental issues and things like that. But it's a big. It's one of those books that, like, while I said, while I doubt it's in many LCSs, it sells like millions of copies. There's always that weird realm. Same with like the Rainer Telegemeier books. Like, there's all those interesting comics where everything happens, but no one knows about it in a comic book. Bone was Bone. You could get in store, but it was never like the big seller it was in, like through Scholastic or any of them other places.
You mean the thing, Andrew, when we say, oh, they're published by real book publishers.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like,
oh, they sell like billions of copies. Now.
Yeah, you know, they escaped the comics ghetto.
Yeah. But they're technically, or the Diary of a Wimpy Kid. There's all that stuff that always makes me think, there's this whole other world that doesn't revolve around comic book stores and that sort of thing, which makes you
feel good about comics when you hear about stories like that, because you're like, comics are cool, comics sell.
Comics sell huge. They just don't, like, floppies and superheroes and everything may not be the thing, but it seems like there's all these other genres of it. But I don't know if I read it online or read half or whatever, but I remember thinking it's one of those that kind of sucks you in, and it's pretty, like, you can see why it sells a million copies of it, even though, you know, the artwork is very scratchy.
Yeah.
And very simple.
But this is definitely in the mini comic realm, and it looks like one of those, like, I think I talked about it before, like the Ristograph type of two color type of thing. Where it's sort of like a pink reddish thing for some of the stuff in here. Oh, and of course the blob-like creature is, of course, that color.
Yeah, so I like the cartoonist. And the other one was, it's online, the XYZ, XKD.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't need...
XKCD, sorry.
Yeah.
That's another one that's very, in the same kind of, like, silly... goofy thought-based comic, but those are just single kind of blurb sketches.
Some of those went on. I remember the XKCD one where they had, it was like a whole map.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sometimes they play
and then
with
it
the
was
format.
It was just like ridiculous. Like you could climb this map for an hour.
Yeah, and I like how, you could keep scrolling through. But most of them are like some. Like a funny little chart or whatever, but that's xkcd.com. And it's just fun to sometimes, I mean, I don't check it all the time, but you know, every 8 months or whatever, it comes up in something and end up reading it for like a.
Or like you're now you're getting me into like more like end of like year stuff. It also reminds me of like the dinosaur comics thing that was the same panels every day, just different words.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this other world of comics outside of the comic store. And
you know what I noticed that was a big thing over the year, too, was that Nancy comic strip, like, just blew up everywhere.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the old Nancy or the new Nancy, but I follow them on Twitter, and they post the gag strip every day. And so I'm like, yeah, I like it. I mean, it's not like... I'm not lat rolling in the floors, but it's really well done. It's clever as heck. Like, I mean, there is some fourth wall breaking, but I don't mind.
Yeah, like what? I'm just wondering, like after something like that happens, you're wondering about like what other strip like could you do that with and not have like some massive revolt or something? Like it would be weird. Well, like, I mean, Archie's tried different styles, but that seems to like that is the style for that strip now. Like that is the strip.
Well, I also don't know what's still run. Like, is Beetle Bailey still run? Like, I just don't know what classic. What about Kathy? I mean, it would help if it was one that was been around a long time.
Garfield.
And has already had a few different people. Oh, like Gasoline Alley or Joe Palooka. Like, one of them ones that, you know, has been around for 60 years and been through. Maybe Blondie and Dagwood. They could do something with them.
This is interesting. Maybe we should try our hand at some of this stuff, Andrew, and post the
results. I don't know if any of those have ever... I don't know if they're carried in news... Like, my newspaper has, like, a few strips, but not that many. So I only see the Nancy stuff online. I don't even know if it runs in many newspapers anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if it really needs to necessarily, right? Because that's not, like, the thing anymore. But doesn't some of those things, like, run, like, if it's King Features or whatever, don't they have their stuff online just for, like, syndicated strips?
Yeah, but you can read them for free, and that's why I'm like, I don't know how they make money off that.
Merchandise. Everything's merchandising and advertising now, right?
Well, good luck. I hope people are buying those Nancy t-shirts.
I know, right?
I think we're rambling here. Thanks for listening. Hope everyone has a safe and happy 2018-2019 transition period. And, you know, keep up with the indie comics.
I hope this was the year of indie. I haven't counted if we beat Marvel Noise.
I felt self-conscious about my catchphrase, so I changed it. Phil, do you have any catchphrase you want to use?
Nope. And I won't say goodbye either.